Welcome to Worlds Apart. For all the similarities between the current upheaval and previous world wars, one thing is absolutely unprecedented. Never before has an operational nuclear power station been in the midst of an active war zone or changed hands as a result of it. Never before has a distinction between civil and military use of nuclear technology, between a functioning nuclear reactor and a ticking time bomb, been so blurred. When the specter of a nuclear apocalypse is in its zenith, is it too late to ponder a contingency plan? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Dmitry Suslov, Deputy Director at the Center for Comprehensive European and International Studies at the Higher School of Economics in Moscow. Dmitry, it's good to see you again. Thank you very much for being available.
Hello, Oksana. Thank you. My pleasure.
Now, the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant has been in the headlines a lot in both Russian and Western media, although in diametrically opposing framing. The Russians insist that it is the Ukrainians who are shelling the station and are essentially engaging in nuclear terrorism. The Ukrainians and their Western backers insist that it's the other way around. But regardless of the culpability, don't you think that in all this bickering about who is doing that, don't you think that the world has lost sight of what is actually happening, that we have a functioning nuclear facility being targeted by artillery and how it may affect all, regardless of who is doing that?
Precisely. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, all the debates were about blaming the other side of shelling. At the same time, the threat of nuclear disaster, which could be worse than the one of Chernobyl, let alone Fukushima, was downplayed. And there were apparent comments in the Western press as well as in Kiev that even if the nuclear reactor is shelled directly, probably nothing dangerous could happen because the facility is more protected than the Chernobyl one in 1980s and so on and so forth. This is extremely dangerous. But I think the shelling is also important in itself, because it is very clear that the purpose of the Ukrainians and the Western backers of the Ukrainian regime is to push the Russians out. Is to prove that the very presence of Russia, of Russian troops in Zaporizhzhia region, let alone at the station, is a threat to international security. So, which is false.
Whatever is their intention, the means that they are choosing to do that, if they were just after any other strategic facility, let's say an airport, the desire to take it back or to cause as much damage as possible would have been tactically understandable. But in this case, the damage cannot be contained. Is the instinct of self-preservation totally off in Kyiv? Because a nuclear cloud would reach Kyiv much faster or than Moscow. For that matter, it could reach any other European capital.
Well, I think all the history of the last 6 months and beyond proves that the instinct of survival is out in Kyiv, because if this instinct has been there, they would have already agreed with the political settlement of the conflict along the lines that Russia has been suggesting since early March. But the problem is that they are not independent in their political decisions. They are led by the United States and by the British, who probably think that even if the nuclear disaster happens in the Zaporizhzhia atomic station, they will be less to suffer, or especially the United States, which is ocean beyond. So the political purpose of proving the false allegation that the very presence of Russia is the threat, not the shelling by the Ukrainians, but the presence of Russia, is above the real dangers of the nuclear disaster.
But Dmitry, even if we agree that, let's say, the Ukrainian leadership is suffering from PTSD and cannot assess the situation objectively or sanely, for that matter, it has a number of very strong and very vocal European allies who are located very near Ukraine. And I know that, for example, you mentioned the Chernobyl disaster. It still manifests itself in many areas of Europe and Asia, for example, in Turkey, in the heightened rates of cancer among the affected populations. You mentioned Fukushima, and there were a number of very important strategic decisions taken, for example, in Germany, the decision to suspend nuclear activity because of the fears associated with Fukushima. So why are the Europeans so laid back about that, even if they fully agree with the Ukrainian intention to kind of cancel out Russia altogether?
Well, I think the reason is because the conflict has created such a political atmosphere in the West in general and in Europe in particular, which prevents them from saying the truth, which prevents them from any word which criticizes Ukraine or even is different than the Ukrainian narrative. Witness the scale of condemnation suffered by Henry Kissinger, by Amnesty International, by the Pope of Rome, Francis, when they dared something which slightly differed the Ukrainian narrative, again, pushed and promoted by the United States and United Kingdom, the level of and the scale of condemnation was outmost. This is why even in extreme danger, this current political atmosphere in the West, unfortunately, does not allow independent voices and, you know, truthful voices in the continental Europe to say something that would contradict the political purposes of the US, UK, and the Ukrainian puppet.
And yet Russia is still pursuing some modest attempts at trying to, if not mediate, then find some common international ground. I'm talking about the recent visit by a team from the International Atomic Energy Agency to the Zaporizhia power station, something that I think caused a split among Russian analysts. Some of them suggested that it was a worthwhile thing to do, you know, opening, leaving a door open to some sort of an international oversight. Others argued that it was a reckless move on the part of the Russians because it essentially invited a Ukrainian attempt to storm the station once again and sort of fed the Ukrainian demons. I wonder where do you stand on this? Do you think it makes sense to try to engage international organizations in this case?
Well, I think yes, because IAEA, which is operating under the auspices of the United Nations, is not a Western organization, it's a global institution. And nuclear energy is widespread well beyond the West. And Russia is working with the whole world on this matter, with the international community, which is wider than the collective West,
but
much wider.
With all due respect, that international community is also susceptible to Western influence. And if you remember, a couple of years ago, Russia already attempted to involve a specialized international organization in inspections in a war zone. I'm talking about the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons.
And chemical weapons, yeah.
Went to Syria and produced very politicized, if not consciously misleading, report about what actually happened. And their own staff later leaked information about how it was manipulated. Again, I'm repeating the same question. Don't you think that the same thing could happen again?
I think, Oksana, that the problem of dependence of the secretariats of international organizations on the West and the disproportionate Western influence in these secretariats does exist, especially in the UN secretariat, and there are innumerable examples of that. But we don't have a different UN yet. We don't have a different IAEA yet. These are the institutions that we are compelled to work with for the sake of international security and nuclear security. And I think that the visit matters. Several members of this delegation is still on site. And Rafael Grossi, the director of the IAEA, said that he hopes that it could be a permanent mission, which Russia fully supports. And look, with the arrival and presence of the IAEA delegations, the Ukrainian shellings have disappeared. They have stopped, right? And Russia is interested for now. Yes, for now. But Russia is interested in security. Russia is interested in, you know, preservation of this nuclear power station and continuation of its performance in a safe way, and working with the IAEA. You know, the report that IAEA is supposed to deliver in the UN Security Council several days from now, if I'm not mistaken, on September 6th, could be extremely important in this regard, and could draw again international attention and create an international pressure beyond the West, from the non-Western world, towards Ukraine, you know, to stop preparing the stage for a new nuclear disaster.
Well, I guess we will have to wait and see. I hope you're right. But for the time being, Dmitry, we have to take a very short break. We will be back in just a few seconds. Stay tuned.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Welcome back to World Apart with Dmitry Suslov, Deputy Director at the Center for Comprehensive European and International Studies at the Higher School of Economics in Moscow. Dmitry, I heard you say recently at one of the Russian political shows that in the final months of the Soviet Union, the United States under the George Bush Senior administration was very concerned about the state of Russia's nuclear industry. And they, in fact, invested in, a lot in safeguarding nuclear materials, nuclear rockets, etc., to make sure, and they did it not only for themselves, certainly there was a selfish interest, but they did it also for the wider humanity. What do you think the Biden administration stands on the threat of nuclear non-proliferation, both in military sense and in a sense of using safe use of civil nuclear technology? I'm asking not about public statements, not about the rhetoric, but what's your sense of actually how concerned are Americans about what is happening in Zaporizhia?
Well, I think that the collapse of the Soviet Union played a very negative role in responsibility of the U.S. foreign policy, because this responsibility drastically reduced. The U.S. believed and started to believe more in their own myths. They invented this idea of the U.S. victory in the Cold War, of the end of history, of the unipolar moment, and so on and so forth. And the Bush senior administration behaved with a greater element of responsibility. This is why, of course, they wanted to weaken the Soviet Union, but didn't. But the Bush, his Secretary of State Baker, National Security Advisor Scowcroft, they didn't want a collapse.
They wanted to do it in a smart way so that it does not cause damage to everybody else.
Precisely, because they didn't want an uncontrolled proliferation of nuclear weapons. And when the Soviet Union still collapsed because of purely domestic reasons, they immediately made an effort to secure Soviet nuclear weapons, and the United States basically was the engine behind the recollection of Soviet nuclear weapons from Ukraine, Belarus, and Kazakhstan into Russia under the centralized and safe control.
Do you think they would regret that decision right now? If they could turn back the time, do you think they would have made an opposite decision?
Well, it's hard to say, of course, but what I'm trying to say that, you know, the Bush senior administration was witnessing still the final stages, but it was still the Cold War. Whereas, and this is why it behaved much more responsibly. It genuinely wanted to avoid a nuclear accident.
What essentially you're saying is that they were scared enough. They were scared and rational enough. Do you think the Biden administration is scared enough by the fallout from the current crisis? Because, I mean, we all can see that whatever, you know, that public rhetoric is, the fallout from the war in Ukraine on energy prices, on domestic public attitudes, on inflation, et cetera, is humongous. They could not be any more isolated from the effects of their foreign policy. Does it hit home already?
Well, I think that the Biden administration, unfortunately, is not scared enough. Because the scale and depth of American participation in the Ukrainian military conflict does create the preconditions for the so-called horizontal escalation, which is the direct military clash between Russia and NATO and Russia and the United States. Throughout the last 6 months, the United States has been constantly crossing the red lines and kind of pushing the red lines, moving the red line forward and forward with the supplies of the increasingly heavier weapons, with the supplies of intelligence information, with actually preparing and supervising over the Ukrainian military operations, with the approval of the Ukrainian military strikes on the Russian territory, such as Crimea. The United States is participating in this conflict in a very big scale. The scale is growing, and this is dangerous. The United States bears political and prestige responsibility for the consequences and for the for the results of the war. And since Ukraine is unable to show any success, such as the current attempted counteroffensive, which is failing, you know, what the United States is supposed to do, right? What can the United States do? On the one hand, the United States can accept the truth that it is impossible to defeat Russia in the open military conflict and allow diplomacy to work, but this is unacceptable for them yet because of their stated purpose of defeating and weakening Russia. Or the other option is actually prone of the Third World War, which is the qualitative increase, a further qualitative increase of the military assistance to Ukraine, or even open participation of NATO in this operation. This is a deadlock for the United States, and this really creates the stage for escalation.
Now, Dmitry, as important as the Zaporizhia plant is, it's not the only nuclear facility in Ukraine. I think there are three more stations. And even if with the intervention of the IAEA, the situation in Zaporizhia miraculously calms down, do you think a threat of nuclear terrorism or just nuclear blackmail would recede? And by the way, do you think that the Americans, with that level of control and supervision over the Ukrainians that you mentioned, do you think they have any qualms about the use of nuclear facilities for geopolitical purposes?
I think that unless the United States, United Kingdom, and of course the Kievan government drops the idea of pushing Russia out, the nuclear danger will remain. Because it is absolutely it is crystal clear that it is impossible
can I,
for
can
them.
Can you specify what do you think they mean by pushing Russia out? Russia is a huge country. Where on earth could it be pushed? You cannot push
that's
it under the ocean. You cannot put it on the moon. So how?
You know
exactly
that's the point. You know, President Zelensky of Ukraine has stated that he will continue to fight unless he retakes all the Ukrainian land with the 1991 borders. Americans are apparently and openly approving this purpose. right? And it is absolutely clear that it is impossible to drive Russia out through traditional military means. This is why they turn to nuclear terrorism and the threat of nuclear terrorism as a mean, you know, to try to push Russia out in this way. This is why I think the danger will remain unless they change the political purpose of their policy.
You know, I try to follow political discussions both in Russia and in the West, and it's clear that both sides are imbued with this sense of righteousness. But at least the Russian analysts are trying to understand the rationale of the enemy. They recognize it's the enemy, but they are trying to understand what is, you know, how decisions are being arrived at and what is moving them, what is the objectives. Whereas in the West, everything starts and ends with Putin's and Russia's demonic nature. There's very little analysis, almost none of it. And it's increasingly taking on the vibes of some sort of a holy war, of a crusade. Do you think we are still dealing with a rational opponent, people who make decisions in Washington? Are they rational in the traditional sense of rationality?
Well, I think there are quite many smart analysts and scholars in the United States who are getting Russia right. They are predominantly realists, people like John Mersheimer, Stephen Walt, Henry Kissinger, and many others. But unfortunately, they are not the ones who drive American foreign policy. You are absolutely right. The U.S. foreign policy is dominated by liberal and neoconservative hawks who try to perform the whole conflict as a struggle between the good and the evil, democracy and autocracy. And they demonize Russia. They try to prove that Russia is the source of evil. And, you know, this makes it impossible to make a settlement, you know, because even
you,
as
you
this,
don't make pacts with the devil, right?
Absolutely. Then it is the existential conflict. And this puts the United States in a deadlock, because if they don't win this fight between the good and the evil in a traditional way, they will have to escalate. That's what Kissinger is constantly talking about. That's very dangerous.
Well, speaking about deadlock in quite literal sense, President Biden the other day said that Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent a form of extremism that threatens the very foundation of the American Republic. Given how badly the Democrats are doing in the polls, given the recent searches at Trump's estate, given the midterm elections coming up, do you think Trump has reasons to be concerned about his freedom or even his safety?
Well, I think that the persecution of Donald Trump is absolutely true and apparent. The Democrats want to put him in jail, and they will try all the means, you know, to remove him from active participation in politics and ultimately putting him into jail. The raid in Mar-a-Lago was just a recent manifestation of that. And yes, the FBI has become Biden's and Democrats' kind of personal Gestapo, you know, the repression mechanism. I think that, you know, despite the current politics, the general situation in the United States is very dangerous, because I haven't witnessed that kind of intensity of political struggle, that kind of enmity between Democrats and Republicans, and that kind of gap between progressives and conservatives in the United States since the 1850s and 60s, since the time which resulted into the Civil War in the United States in the 19th century. I think that the United States is in the stage of political civil war right now. It is not excluded that at a certain stage, this political civil war could turn into a full-fledged civil war.
Well, I agree with you, and I want to note that I think the level of support that Trump enjoys right now, not only in numerical sense, I think the intensity and sort of the the ferocity almost of the sentiment within the Republican base is not to be compared with what used to exist back in 2016. Then at that time, these people were still sort of believing in the American democracy, in the American institutions. Now it is life or death for them, not only in a political sense, but also in quite literal sense. So it is indeed quite dangerous. If there is a major unrest in the United States, do you think Washington's attention from our western border will be diverted? Or do you think, on the contrary, the Americans will sort of try to up the ante?
Well, first, you are absolutely right about the crisis of trust towards American institutions, towards the rule of law, courts, the FBI, police, and so on and so forth. And the lack to trust institutions is a very powerful indicator of the crisis. Actually, this is how Soviet Union collapsed, right? Because the people did not believe, did not trust the Soviet institutions and the system as a whole. And now there is a clear deficit of trust towards the system itself in the United States.
Not just a clear deficit of trust, there's an active mistrust. There's a hardened belief that they will be, that their elections, their votes would be stolen.
Absolutely, absolutely, right. And of course, about 60% of Republicans want Donald Trump to be their candidate at the next presidential elections. His support in the Republican Party is greater than is the support of Joe Biden in the Democratic Party, right? But still, the Biden administration is conducting repressions, thus antagonizing a very big proportion of American people. So unrest is possible. You know, and
what does it mean for us here or for the war theater
for
in
us,
Ukraine?
You know, it will depend on the scale of unrest and the scale of civil war in the United States. If the scale is substantial but still manageable, if the United States does not collapse as a state and a country, then the consequences will be dangerous because the more political upheaval exists in American domestic politics, the less responsible is their foreign policy, and the more prone are they for some sort of escalation and irresponsible behavior. But if the United States collapses, well, then we will also have to think about the consequences for the world, about their nuclear weapons, you know, about their military bases all over the world, and so on and so forth. So I would rather, as you know, as the Bush senior administration, I would rather think about the negative security consequences of their political turmoil.
Yeah, well, we will definitely not rejoice at somebody else's damage and harm. Dmitry, we have to leave it there. Thank you very much for your time today. As usual, it's a great pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.